Good evening. Welcome to Ask Catherine for the week of July 19th. Questions as of Monday. We publish on July 22nd. Let's just dive in with cash and precious metals. In your recent video discussion, you mentioned the Bank of England's PRA revision. Please explain what impact it will have on the precious metals, especially coin market. What this means, basically, the PRA came out and said it had amended its approach to precious metals holdings related to deposit taking and clearing activities. That was basically to give them a pass on the part of the Basel III regulations. And I'm assuming it's just going to make it a lot easier for the banks to hey-ho the status quo. So I think it means the London bullion market will not be inconvenienced in any way by the roll-in of the new Basel III issues. So no increase in deposits or in reserves to back precious metal activity. So I would think it would be good for the coin market. Spotted this on BBC Online. I was extremely surprised, perhaps the start of something. Let me just check this. Is the bank really hooked on quantitative easing? It's an article from the BBC. John Titus and I discuss it on Money and Markets this week. It's a very sort of muddled article. You know, the notion being, okay, now the economy is dependent on QE, so we have to keep it going, which is not true. What is happening is the going direct reset, and pumping out and printing money like this is all part of the engineering and changing the model. So, no, I don't think it's the start of anything. I think everything we're looking at started on August 22nd, 2019. If you haven't seen the new wrap-up, I strongly recommend you read it. Hi, Catherine. My mother recently passed away. I'm the beneficiary of an annuity. Do you have any views on whether to receive the money in lump sum or at a lower amount or in annuity payments? You really need somebody highly qualified at annuity, somebody who's very knowledgeable to go through this. So, I would, if you don't have a financial advisor, I would definitely get somebody who is professionally knowledgeable and experienced with insurance, whose only interest is what is in the best interest of you. I wanted to ask you for a referral for a financial advisor. I don't give referrals because that's deemed to be investment advice. I did do the equity overview this week. It'll publish the same time as Ask Catherine with an excellent financial advisor from Pennsylvania who's clearly qualified to do this. So I would listen to that. And if you think that's a good person for you to talk to, you might consider that. And we've had other investment advisors. Last year, we had another one who's also in the New York area. You're in California. We live in California. I've decided whether to sell and have to decide whether to sell some rental property. She had invested in another state. Do you have any advice? I think the thing is, if this is cash flowing well and you have a good manager watching it, attractive to keep it. If you can't keep an eye on it, you don't have somebody you can trust to watch it, you may consider, you know, bringing the assets closer to home. I like having, you know, rental property if it's attractive in this environment, and that means good management. Just make sure you're properly insured because it's a dangerous time. Dear Catherine, I have heard and never questioned that all central banks in the world are part of the Bauer Brothers syndicate. I think you mean the Beck Brothers, except for Cuba, North Korea, and Iran. So the seven countries and seven countries and 5-year plan after 9/11 was to round up all the central banks. It's murky because some banks look like they're public banks, but they're really private. So the Bank of England is owned by the government except for 10%, which is secret. But if you look at how it's run, it's really run out of the city in London. Anyway, so it's a little bit murky. If you haven't watched Richard Warner's documentary and read his book, The Princess of Vienna, I can't recommend it enough. It sort of goes into the issue. But there's no doubt that G7 is trying to control by controlling the central banks around the world. I forgot to mention Herman, president of Spear Bank. If Russia is part of the club, he would know what is going on. Judging by his behavior, he knows a lot. Why not ask him or send him a complimentary copy of your latest publication, then send him an email saying yes or no? What do you think? Herman was the hero of the week in January 2020, in part because of an interview he did in TASS. Sparebank is a fascinating company. I mean, Herman is, you know, if I could have dinner with just about anybody in the world, Herman would be on the list. I think he's a very astute and capable person. And that is a fascinating bank and leads you into operations in many different countries, including across the Silk Road Sparebank, for those of you who don't know, is the largest bank in Russia. And interestingly enough, if you look at Lynn Alden's sort of recommendation for premium investors, she's got a position in Sparebank, and it's a very interesting company worth taking a look if you're interested in Russian stocks. Hi, Catherine. Kudos to you for Cash Friday. For those of us that use cash on Monday to Thursday as well, your message is much needed when hardly anyone I know uses cash, whether it is mere convenience or fear of being mugged at the ATM. You know, cash is not safe to carry. Didn't you just love all the spins? Firstly, years ago, I forgot where I heard that some insiders have credit cards without a credit limit and for which the balances are wiped clean. Have you heard this? If you have, do you have any sources? I have not heard that, but I'm sure from watching the kickback systems work, I'm convinced it exists. So I don't have sources, but I bet you $1,000 it's real. And it's a great, you know, it's a great way to give kickbacks to people like civil servants. Second, one of the benefits of learning about bank-created fiat currency and now open-source decentralized blockchain is that it engenders new questions in our minds that we never thought of before, such as in this time of increasing loss of privacy in our transactions, that will only get worse and ultimately disappear. Well, not necessarily. We're willing for things to turn out okay. Just remember, it's not just loss of privacy. Do you have any idea how big the skim is on local and small business from the financial transaction fees? It's unbelievable. It's breathtaking. A government financial fraud and U.S. government finance is going dark. Regulatory and system capture, bank criminality and fines. And as we wake up the fact that the commercial banking system is really a one-way mirror behind a firewall of which there is far from total public transparency, why would we believe that financial institutions would comply with banking regulation strictures on currency creation that we have been lulled into believing or complied with merely because no one thought to question it before? Well, I don't believe anything. I do think that the line between compliance and free-for-all is very interesting, because if you go to many of the big banks, you know, they're getting drowned with more and more compliance. And at the same time, over, you know, for example, in the ESF fund, what's going on is systemic stuff going on outside the law that's unbelievable. So, you know, it's very interesting where the overt and the covert divide. Okay, so it's essentially a rhetorical question, but I would still appreciate your thoughts. After all, a counterfeit digital dollar is completely indistinguishable from a regular digital dollar against a bank loan. Yes, absolutely. But remember, the counterfeit would have to be confirmed and approved by the central bank. So that's the question. How are they going to run the dark economy? I just think that the retail system is going to be wholly, completely different from the wholesale system. And so the covert side, a lot of it will be done through the whole. But these are some of the questions that John Titus and I are asking about for the CBDC, which we'll publish sometime in mid-August. Then someone sent something about how London became the world's financial hub and asked the question, if plague and plague laws have preceded movement of the reserve currency, what are the candidate geographical destinations for hypothetical global reserve currency? What geographical properties might be attractive for the financial capital of a planet-wide digital system? So you gave a very interesting list. You said infrastructure for hypersonic flight, submarine capable connectivity, infrastructure for management of space assets, infrastructure for smart city and population surveillance, proximity to cultural icons and ancient ley lines, culture neutrality to build global trust across societies, attractive to human talent with tech, finance, bioskills, access to high-quality food and reliable energy, defense against social instability and natural disasters, resiliency to planetary changes, e.g. pole shift, and I think those are all important items. I would add strong culture, particularly of responsibility. And when I say strong culture, I mean deep, long, historical, look back 500 to 1,000 years. Who's good at managing risk? And who's good with trade? And who's good with money? And who's good with dealing with people all around the world? And what you find is, and would be trusted by the G7 nations. It's a small, very small group. Hello, Catherine. I can understand the necessity of being cautious of disinformation, and my question comes without disrespect intended, but could it be that the Spanish reporter about graphene is indeed correct due to Big Pharma's manipulation? You go on. It's funny. Yesterday, you know, we've been so plowed under with I would describe it as graphene yaya, that I decided to go take a look at the stock associations and penny stocks, and a lot of penny stocks on graphene, and whether they're doing a pump and dump, because this is exactly the kind of thing, if you're wanting to increase interest in graphene, you do. Now, I would just note before I say any of this, Rappaport had a really good article on graphene and why he thinks it's important we research whether or not graphene is in the masks and the swabs and some of the other materials. I think I can't remember if it was the swabs or the masks. It was one of them, he said. But we're clearly dealing with a nanoworm phenomena. We've been dealing with a long time with a spraying. You know, I think the question of is graphene in the mix or what is in the mix, what's causing the magnetism, these are all really good questions. But let me tell you what I responded to this fellow. Because, you know, I've gotten asked 30 or more questions about this. You know, my guess on this video is it's total crap. And it's really hard to say, no, it's total crap 30 times, let alone to have people ask you to spend your time unpacking why you think it's crap when you don't have enough time to go through all the stuff that's not crap. Because I want to get you the best stuff, and I need my time to spend time on the best stuff. I don't need to spend a lot of time getting rid of things that market, including when I get something like this 30 times, then my question is, did they use entrainment? I'm mighty suspicious. So I wrote back, a Spanish researcher had basically told us while this was crap and that what was said was different than the study referred to, and pointed out what the study was, which is not in English, which is why you had to depend on a Spanish researcher. Anyway, so I put that in the notes and I wrote back, if you cannot stop current mandates with ifs. We need hard facts that are rock solid now, of which there are plenty. We should focus on actions using it. In other words, my goal is to stop employee and school mandates, which are poisoning people right now. And there is a tremendous amount of rock solid science to stop those mandates. So while I'm interested in all sorts of speculation and research, it is a complete distraction, because there is no doubt in my mind that this wave of stuff was used to white out the stuff that could get the mandate stopped. There's a war, and these guys are trying to, you know, fill our children and us with injections of mystery ingredients, but some of which we know from the science that's done so far are killing people, and it looks like it may be killing, you know, and disabling a lot more people. And I got to tell you, having worked with families who are living with vaccine injury, this is a financial expense you do not want. If you want to make a lot of money in your portfolio, don't get vaccine injured. Trust me. There's not enough money you can make. I don't care what speculation you're dreaming of that can make up for this kind of healthcare devastation and expense. Let me keep reading. If you cannot stop mandates with ifs, you need hard facts that are rock solid now, of which there is plenty. We should focus on actions using it. Yes, would it be good to investigate graphene and what is causing the magnetism, as Rappaport suggests? The video that was promoted is not it, FYI, from Spanish researcher. Okay. So if you're entertaining yourself with this, get off the couch and start stopping mandates with hard science that we already have. And I should mention the Doctors for COVID Ethics and UK column are going to do an online webinar on July 29th and July 30th. And that's going to round up and represent all of it. But there's a ton of stuff at Solari that I've republished. A lot of great stuff coming out and a lot of great doctors and scientists fighting to protect you. Hi, Catherine. Subject Peter Costello. We have 3 MSN channels. They're coming from Australia. 9, 7, and Sky News. Costello is the chairman of Channel 9, who promotes all things vaccine. He's also the chair of the Future Fund that finances and makes money on vaccines. Channel 9 is so blatantly part of the scheme. So you send me the link. Yeah, Australia is really living through some very difficult times. Then somebody writes in, and I think they're referring to Bhakti's new video, 4 Disclosures, which is terrific. Wikipedia writes about Dr. Bhakti, and then a quote from Wikipedia. And then in October, the University of Mainz, where Bhakti had been the chair of, I think it was the chemistry or microbiology department, disavowed his views. So because of all the disinformation you and Ms. John Titus referred to in your 7, 15, 21 money markets, I'm sure what sources to believe anymore. How do we know Bhakti's conclusions made in his video, The Four Disclosure, have been thoroughly vetted and peer-reviewed by qualified independent medical research bodies? Is he legit? In my opinion, if you look at Dr. Bhakti's credentials and what he has written, he's published two books now, and the team he's put together at Dr. Shrikovit Ethics, it's an unbelievably collaborative effort with lots of very experienced doctors and highly intelligent and ethical scientists. And if you look at their discussion and debate, it's phenomenal because they're all working together to figure this out. And one of the things that most impresses me about them is that they subject all of their discussion to lots of other people, both by email and close relations. So there's a very serious effort, and the people, in my opinion, are very extraordinary, very, very brilliant, and very ethical, very concerned, and just trying to find out what's best, you know, what they can rely on. And they strike me as pretty careful people. Here's the thing about using Wikipedia. Wikipedia is very good for non-controversial information. So if you want to know what is a bond, it's terrific. And I support them, so I give a monthly donation to Wikipedia because I think for the non-controversial information, they do a really useful job, and I use it a lot. For anything that's controversial, they're completely useless, and that's because the people who get on there and engineer and work overtime to kind of rig things, they have more money than God. Go check out, there was one great article they wrote about a huge department in Israel, I think the intelligence agencies, whose job is just to engineer stuff on Wikipedia. So for anything controversial, you need other sources. The other thing is the universities are subject to massive top-down pressure, as are the governments. I mean, I cannot underscore the power of the invisible weaponry in money printing, whether it's the money printing by the central banks or the satellites and weaponry in the skies. And there is a complete inability in any of the universities or big institutions, particularly that receive government money. Government grants are subject to government regulation to maintain any integrity. And it's a very sad thing to watch, but the corruption is remarkable. If you have never seen, Jeffrey Smith did a fabulous video years ago called Scientists Under Attack, something like that. And it describes what they do. Case in point is they just ran Chris Exley out of his university in the UK. It's horrible to watch. All around the world, one of the conversations I'm a part of is how do we start a real university? Because there are none left. What I tried to do in Salieri is run a very high filter and get you the people and the videos and information I think is the best. There's a lot of things we don't know. As you know, Dr. Farrell and I love to engage in high-octane speculation, but we put that into unanswered questions. I try to keep that separate. So I run a very high filter, but it's all based on what I think. It's an art, it's not a science. And so I do the very best I can. If you're not seeing it on the Salieri report, especially one I get 30 times, I don't think it's useful. I just want to read a quote that I love. John Rappaport constantly quotes this, and I put the link in the notes to his latest article that uses it. This is from Dr. Angel, who was the editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, which is in the U.S. arguably the most prestigious journal of medicine. Quote, and this was, she published this in the New York Review of Books on January 15, 2009. Quote, it is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of trusted physicians or authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my two decades as an editor of the New England Journal. That's quite extraordinary, but if anybody says, well, where are your peer-reviewed studies? I couldn't give a damn unless they're peer-reviewed studies that are recommended by scientists and doctors who I think are trustworthy. So that, you know, I can't tell you how much peer-reviewed crap there is. Anyway, it makes it very, very difficult for all of us to try and sort out what is true and what is not. And that's one of the reasons I so appreciate the efforts of the subscribers over the last 2 years, because the people with much more knowledge of medicine and healthcare and science have done an excellent job of updating and educating us all. And it just goes to show you again that no one is as smart as all of you. You know, shared intelligence really does work. I learned that in the government, working with the reg process, both internal to the government and then publicly. And it was amazing how, when you subjected everything to criticism and comment from everybody, how much you could learn. Dear Catherine, I had a couple questions around COVID death rates. Are the overall death rates higher than in normal years? I've been watching the flow of statistics on death statistics from professional epidemiologists, and I think things differ from country to country. So what I would do is I would find the comments of the epidemiologists for different countries. And I found, again, my stream is from the American Frontline Doctors and Doctors for COVID Ethics, but I'm sure there are more sources on the internet. I'll keep an eye out and make an effort to try and post any of the studies. My impression is that the overall death rates are not higher in the G7, with some exception, not clear to me. But I think outside the G7, there are places where they're much higher, because the death from starvation and the economic impact. I'll keep a lookout and make sure I post them to News Trends and Stories. And then you ask if you ever crossed paths with John Judge, did you get to know his material? Yes, I communicated with Judge on numerous occasions. I thought he was a great man, did great work, and my only controversy was him. He banked at J.P. Morgan Chase and wouldn't change. We had quite. He said that, well, the ATM was free. I said, oh, great. Help the criminals. You know, help the war machine, John. Let me go back and just make a few comments on death. In my experience from after the budget deal blew in 1995, there's been a concerted effort to bring down life expectancy in the general population. It's been rising in the wealthy and the elites, but coming down in the general population, certainly in the United States. And one, I think that there was one or more things that are being referred to COVID. So if you look at the phenomena referred to as COVID and counted as the COVID deaths, there has certainly been a nasty, nasty flu that attacks lungs. And, you know, so I'm assuming there was something special released. Remember, the annual flu has been engineered into COVID deaths, as have been a lot of comorbidities and other things. I think vaccine injury from the annual flu shot was engineered into the COVID statistics. And now the COVID shot is, the injections are causing a lot of adverse events, which are being attributed to COVID. I also think there was euthanasia going on in UK and the US nursing home in New York and New Jersey. Other researchers have talked about pesticides, ethanol, spraying. And of course, if you haven't read Invisible Rainbow, I can't recommend it enough to you on EMF and 5G, because I think there's definitely something happening with some kind of radiation sickness. Also, fear, TV, and entrainment. I just subscriber wrote in and said their daughter was an ICU nurse, and every time they got an order to put somebody on a vent, instead they turned off the TV and their breathing would go back to sufficiently normal enough that they didn't have to put them on a vent. It would not surprise me if TVs were being used to basically contribute to euthanizing people. The biggest killer worldwide has been the shutdown of small business and the economy. If you look at the latest UN report, and I'm not saying that they can't be dodgy either, but starvation and malnutrition is skyrocketing. Of course, then there's also loss of access to medical treatment. The U.S. Life expectancy dropped over a year last year, which is a remarkable drop, but we've been building up to that. And John and I also covered on Money and Markets the fact that the fentanyl skyrocketed during 2020. So this is all part of what I call the great poisoning, and the pandemic is just the new big step up in the great poisoning. So I think at the same time, if you have people stationary, not traveling, not going to work, a lot less economic activity, then that's going to impact the statistics as well. Anyway, I'll keep an eye out for the good epidemiologists, but I think we're watching something, which is, I think the death killers are killing millions. That's what I think. And then one subscriber wrote in, I just have to mention this. My doctor is world renowned. I asked him how long the coronavirus would last. He responded, how should I know? I'm not a politician. Pretty funny. Hi, Catherine. I was wondering if you could get in touch with Reiner in order to suggest that he take the bull by the horns and go down to Spain and take custody of the 100 vials. I agree that it's critical to find out what is in the injections. To do that, you're going to need an analysis of multiple batches in multiple countries. If you look at the deaths and adverse events, they're widely different patterns, particularly between rich places and poor places. So, you know, I'm not assuming this is one batch. But I agree with you. I think it's so important to get to the bottom of what's in this stuff. And I think there are a lot of people trying to do that. Dear Catherine, I know that you referred to saliva tests in the U.S. in one of the previous Money and Markets, and I'm feverishly listening again to the last few, but so far I can't find the place. Just go to the new subscriber input on Solari, and there's a forum. If you do a search on the new subscriber input for saliva, you should get it. I found the story on Facebook. Other than amazing forums Catherine has provided, what other tools are available to help prevent this from happening? Everyone older than 2 should wear masks, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's unbelievable. The control is remarkable. We just had a really great new study on face masks retracted on July 16th. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, it just goes to show you how much the ability to kill with impunity can influence politics. Winter in Sydney, coming to US, EU winters. If there are no GPS satellites, how can this policy be enforced without castle walls? One subscriber worked for a rocket company, the first private rocket company, and asked the guy running it what his goal was, and he said it was to deliver a payload of sand to the suborbital platform. It's because he wanted to be free. You know, with no GPS satellites, they'd be in real trouble. Question, what is the goal of testing since it has nothing to do with PCR? So this is me. What is the goal of testing since nothing has to do with PCR? So the link had to do with the testing. If deep nasal swabs, in my opinion, it's not safe. Now, if you look at the treadmill they're trying to get people on, whether it's testing or injection mandates, my advice to you is don't get off the treadmill. You know, get off the treadmill. And if you say, well, I have to get on the treadmill to eat, you just have to understand where the treadmill's going. You know, I got off the treadmill and I went for periods where I didn't have money for food that day. My utilities got turned off. You know, it was a very ugly pathway. But I refuse to get on the treadmill. So I would just suggest get off the treadmill. Dear Catherine, greetings from sunny Prague. Then a great description of sort of looking for a place to go. And does Albania make sense? The information you send makes it sound really, really attractive. And the answer is I know nothing about Albania. I've always wanted to go. It's very important if you do go that you're part of a critical mass of people who watch out for, critical core of people who watch out for themselves. So I would definitely find other people and who are fun to live around. I do think the reports I get from around the world, people who are in rural areas and away from the financial centers, seem to be much more grounded and doing much better. So it wouldn't surprise me if Albania was that way. It's not in the EU, and I believe it's not in NATO. I haven't checked. Dear Catherine, yes, you highly recommended a book about the transgender phenomena. Could you give me the title and author? Yes, put the link in the show notes. It's Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier, and there's a book review at Solari. If you just put Irreversible Damage or transgender in the search engine, you'll pull it up. Dear Catherine, thank you again for an enlightening conversation you and Farrell have in the second quarter. I'm in the middle of reading Secret Don't Tell, the Encyclopedia of Hypnotism by Carla Emery, as was recommended to Solari subscribers. The beginning of the book offers several case studies of criminal hypnosis done from one fellow human to another. For any subscribers reading and listening, it really truly opens your mind to hypnosis beyond watching people act like chickens on a stage at a theater of entertainment. Which, by the way, I find cruel to do and was always surprised people putting up their hands to be a willing participant. In your recent second quarter wrap-up with Farrell, you asked the following question. Please forgive me if I do not quote it correctly. How is it possible for 190 countries to do the things they're up to their population that is frightening and no one has the ability to say no? Where is that power coming from? So one of your questions is, does that power involve mind control? I'm sure the answer is yes. But I think it's far from the only thing. I think most of the government leaders are subject to more overt individual controls and believe that if you look at the power that's driving this, they believe there's no possible pathway other than to play along and go along. Anyway, so I think it's control is a much more complicated issue, and I went into it deeply in our Control 101 wrap-up, but do I think the folks in Davos are subject to massive amounts of mind control? Yes, like all of us. I think the mind control is quite significant. And it's interesting, if you look at some of the secret societies that use mind control to sort of manage intergenerationally, you know, they're basically doing it to themselves and their own kids. And it's kind of a way of getting everybody in alignment and keeping them in alignment, sort of it's almost a risk management technology. You know, you put the fear of God, and it's not the fear of God. You take out the fear of God and you put in the fear of God, fear of the tribe, I should say, tribal fear, in somebody at a very young age. And then from then on, they play ball. I'll never forget, I used to have a sort of as a colleague and a friend, a really top, very wealthy, from a very wealthy, you know, family, old family, long-standing family in Europe and the United States, who was a good friend. And I remember in 88 and 89 how we used to laugh and joke about how everybody was drinking the Kool-Aid. And he was just very astute at managing his own money and making investments, you know, because he saw the arbitrage between reality and official reality. And I'll never forget going back up in New York and having lunch with him and realizing that suddenly he was buying the Kool-Aid. And I couldn't believe it. It was scary. It scared me that suddenly he had sort of disappeared into the Borg. And part of it was the market just, the stock market just kept going up and making a ton of money, and he was making a ton of money. And if you look at the financial fraud and engineering behind the scenes that was engineering it, he just didn't have access to that information, so I think it was part of it. Anyway, I remember that as being a very frightening lunch. Hello, Catherine. I just came across a report about how a wobble in the moon trajectory could cause floods in the coming years, and I immediately thought of you explaining that the elite are able to control the weather. Maybe you want to dig in. So this looks very interesting. I sent it to Farrell, who I'll see what he says about it. Then somebody sent in a link to a homeschooling site that looks very interesting. I appreciate that. We'll take a look. Somebody disagreed on my assessment of a video on patents. It was Dr. David Martin talking about patents with the German Corona Investigation Committee. And they sent a long description, which I won't repost because they said they were sending it privately. Anyway, this is one of the ones where you get it 30 times and 30 times you say, I don't think this is useful. If you look at the big picture conclusions, they're basically conclusions that you've heard many times from many people before. So I said in my notes back to you, Farrell, Rappaport, Global Research, Patrick Wood, Corbett, Titus, Webb. So we all know that this is not, whatever's going on is illegitimate. I think the idea that I just don't believe the pharmaceutical companies are in control. But the other thing is, I'm not a patent expert, so I ran this by several patent experts. I would say the video was not useful. They were much more, the words they used were much uglier, is all I could say. So as I said, I don't want to spend a lot of time unpacking, finding things that are great. And as I said, it's an art, not a science. So Soleri is my bet for the most useful stuff. And again, speculative stuff where we don't know the answer, I put it in you. Unanswered questions, because I think there's a lot of speculation that's very useful. If my opinion is useful, great. If it's not, feel free to disagree. Dear Catherine, so somebody sent a video of a child being tested in the Vancouver airport. I would describe this as a crime against humanity. I didn't post the video. There's a picture in the show notes of, you know, I basically think the person who insisted on this test and did this test should be sent to prison. I just think this is a crime. And the fact that a child who's resisting that mightily and screaming that mightily, you're putting something near their, you know, the blood-brain barrier, I just think this is dangerous. You could permanently disable somebody doing this shit. If I was a dictator, that they would be in prison. I was just listening to the latest News Trends and Stories Part 2 with Joseph when I heard you talk about the delivery of nanoparticles. You made an offhand reference to Amazon packages, which got me thinking. I've recently stopped ordering from Amazon and finally canceled my Prime membership several weeks ago. I used to think Prime was the greatest. I'm much more educated now. Coincidentally, in the past month and a half, I've received 4 unsolicited packages from Amazon, all addressed to me by name and at my address. I haven't ordered any of them, nor has anyone I know sent them to me. They've contained a strange assortment of items. Several bath faucets, a shower clap, plastic drumsticks, a nighttime bite guard, chemical skin tag remover, and several other pieces of garbage. I've wasted at least a couple hours contacting Amazon and asking that they halt these shipments. I don't want anything from them. They continue to say it will stop. Recently, they put an internal team on this sort of investigation. It only dawned on me listening to you and Joseph that perhaps this is some sort of nanoparticle delivery. It could be. It could also be, you know, if you look at what they're talking about with vaccinations, it could also be vaccine deliveries. At the least, you say it's a weird and kind of creepy story. I would refuse these at the post office level. I would not accept them. I would not touch them. If you can, have your local post office mark all Amazon packages returned to sender. I wouldn't even accept them. Don't accept them at the post office level. I would also say, if you can't write return to sender on them without touching them, you might get some gloves and, you know, put them back in your mailbox or something. But under no circumstances would I bring unsolicited packages into the house if you can avoid it. And I would say now it's very good practice. You know, don't send packages to people who don't know you at this point, because I just think, given the games with biowarfare, I think we're going to have to be very much more careful about when we open the door or when we open a package from somebody we don't know. I would start to think much more judiciously about all of this. And in Money and Markets, I just went through with John why, if one of the vaccine team come to your door, you don't answer the door. If you make the mistake of answering the door, you shut the door. You don't talk to them. You don't have to answer the door. You don't have to talk to them. Just shut them out. And I would do the same with packages in the mail. I think you've got to be very, very careful these days. Hi, team. I just renewed my membership and upgraded to the premium post. You want to know if you could get the promotion deal? Absolutely. Just do me a favor. Always say something to customer service to let them know you want to make sure you get that you've upgraded and you want to make sure you get the promotion deal, but we're happy to do that. And thank you for being a subscriber. And then you sent something, an Antarctica map from Google. Is it from Google Earth? Oh, hi, I'm the Salary Report subscriber. This is from Google Earth, Antarctica's Peninsula with a very interesting name. I hate to tell you, I couldn't read it. You know, it's amazing the kind of things you run into when you do things like Google Earth. I assiduously avoid Google at all costs, so I never use it, but it is pretty interesting what people have found. Catherine, I would like to introduce you, and you're introducing me to somebody who's a whistleblower about food safety. It looks very interesting, so I will take a look and follow up. It's a very interesting topic, as you know. Then question, since Biden took office, about 24 U.S. intelligence officials and diplomats in Austria have developed headaches, vertigo, and vision problems consistent with suspected sonic attacks. You know, this problem of invisible weaponry targeting everybody, but certainly U.S. intelligence officers and diplomats, is increasing. And it's good it's finally come out of the closet. We can talk about it. I did a book review of Rowney Kildee's book couple weeks ago and made her hero of the week. It's Bright Light on Black Shadows. And she did a tremendous amount to illuminate what was going on with electronic weaponry. Question, some additional information about the geological location of the BL4 lab. That's a biowarfare lab in Manhattan, Kansas. And you point out there was an 1867 Manhattan, Kansas earthquake. If you look at the Richter scale, they should be able to, you know, build to protect that. From that. So that may, I'm not sure that that's going to be a problem. It depends on how they built the building. It'd be pretty frightening if they didn't take that into account, given how close it is to the Hubbard Fault. Okay, so then there's a report from Sydney, and you know, what's going on in New South Wales is just horrible. And I really appreciate the information. It's in the show notes. The health officer there just declared that people should not talk to each other, even when wearing masks, because they might give each other COVID, which is the you know, of all the horse, you know what, I've heard this week, it's just, you know, you just can't believe it. Dear Catherine, I hope this email reaches you. I've been trying to ask a question, but face technical glitches, which your team is kindly trying to help me resolve. Why was the WEF World Economic Forum canceled? Why did they cancel the Singapore venue? I think they're very, very nervous about security. And my guess is it had to do with that. I don't think they see a way they can be secure, not just in Singapore. I mean, Singapore is a very safe place, but they're worried about politics and particularly flying out there. So it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of the people involved wanted to travel by ground, although presumably the underground, you know, the underground base network and trains can take you out there. But my guess is this is a security issue. And that security issue translates into expense. Over the last few days, I had the opportunity to listen to your discussion with Titus and Farrell. And then you ask about the Indonesia tsunami. I'm sure there were videos about that at the time, but I don't. The only reports I depended on were the fact patterns I was dealing with. So there are a lot of people who watch the HARP activity vis-a-vis these different events, and I'm not one of them. But I doubt there's anything left on the internet from the tsunami because it was so long ago. But in the recent ones, I would think you'd find a lot of stuff on the internet. And, you know, it's sort of a mixed bag. Your discussion on China is fascinating. I've been trying to understand the geopolitical implications of the Russia-China alliance forged in recent years. I strongly recommend you read State of Our Currency and go through the State of Currency chronologies, both on the website and in the hard copy. Unlike other credible American analysts, you are one of the few who are not too quick to paint China as an ominous rising hegemon. I strongly recommend, again, reading Steve Roche's Unbalanced and then reading The Rise of the Asian Consumer. What is the most important data point that leads you to this position? It's a combination of different things, but one, I really watch the trade balances and who's financing what and in what ways. So a lot of this relates to the trade balances. But I would go back and read Steve Roche and The Rise of the Asian Consumer. As you may know, Tiny Singapore is a major investor in China. It seems to coincide with the 2008 takedown operations. Actually, Singapore becoming a major investor started long ago. When I was in China in 97, they were bringing in people from Singapore all across China to be the managers because they had no managerial tradition in China and people had no managerial skills. And so Singapore became unbelievably powerful because you needed to import so much talent from Singapore. And of course, with that came the investor money. And a lot of people preferred to put money into China through Singapore because it flowed in, you know, in connection with that management infrastructure. And I think my guess is that has had an unbelievably important impact and sort of how the investor game has worked in China. Now you see when you look at Chinese companies, a great deal of board members who, you know, went to American University, worked at McKinsey or worked at Goldman Sachs and sort of went through the corporate U.S. process before striking out on their own. So a lot of it comes from America too, but I just think Singapore's history in business and management makes it a logical place for people to go through because they don't trust China and they don't trust the Chinese. They do trust the Singapore managerial and investment and banking infrastructure. And I think that's going to keep Singapore as being very important and powerful for decades to come. And you point out Singapore became China's latest investor country in 2013. Incidentally, from a geopolitical point of view, Brazil, India, South Africa, and China, save Russia until a few weeks ago, are where the variants of interest emerge. Is this another coincidence? I just think it's politics because I think most of the variants are probably from vaccine injury. If you look at the early statistics from Israel and the UK, it certainly looks like variants are really cover story for vaccine injury is my guess. Hi, Catherine. Do you have an opinion of colonoscopies? I was expected to eventually start getting them because of my family history. I never questioned it until I saw this video posted by Sophia Smallstrom. I don't know, but I do think with tests like this, you know, a lot can go wrong. And if you look at the statistics, I'd be much more inclined to do colon cleansing than to get a colonoscopy. But that's just me. The problem with avoiding certain kinds of testing is it works perfectly until the day it doesn't work, and then you wish you had. But I don't know, I'd much rather do colon cleansing if I had a family history here. Also, cash Friday and cash every day. Nothing like chip cards malfunctioning every store to help you decide to go back to the old way. Yeah, if you look at how irritating the whole system has become, I'm with you. And the other thing is, I'm sick of watching the businesses get skimped. You know, let's just cut out. I'm getting more and more. Cash is looking more and more fashionable. Dear Catherine, truly love your work. While you were talking with Joseph in part one, you mentioned a book titled How to Be Your Own Doctor. Were you referencing How to Be Your Own Doctor by Carl Schrader? There are several different similarly titled books, and I hope you would clarify. I was referring to Where There Is No Doctor. I put the link to the Wikipedia entry about it in the show notes. But I will say this, I think there are a lot of good books on how to be your own doctor or where there is no doctor. And I just think learning as much as you can about how to do things for yourself in that area is just one of the most prudent investments you can ever make. It takes time, and it's a learning journey. I'll never forget, I had a distant cousin who got into trouble with cancer and didn't know what to do. And I was able to say, read this, read this. I was able to call a doctor, get him a good recommendation for he needed surgery, and tell him basically, here's all the natural stuff you can do. Start doing that right away. Here's where you go to get the best doctor. Here's this, don't do this, don't do this, do this. You know, and I realized, okay, well, that took me 10 years and hanging out with all the Salaria Report subscribers, you know, to know all that stuff. And, you know, if you're in the corner, you don't have the time to do the learning you need to get out of the corner. And I was able to help him get out of the corner, and he did. And it was just a great feeling because he's a fantastic guy. I love him to pieces. Anyway, hardly ever get to see him, particularly these days. But really invest in getting yourself an education about health. A film for you, an example of ground up resistance to the banksters, perhaps for the list of recommended films. You sent in a film on British mortgage fraud, which really is a good one. I've seen it, and you're right. It might be something I could use in Let's Go to the Movie. So I appreciate you reminding me of that. I have seen it, and it's quite good. And the extent of the fraud is just shocking. It's just like, oh my God. Catherine, great information on the war on beef. I wanted to forward this interview concerning the centralized control of the beef industry. Two producers who shifted to selling direct to consumers and the issues independent producers face in competitive markets. The RCAF USA convention in August has a one-day discussion on private property rights looming as the America the Beautiful proposal by the Biden administration's 30 times 30. What happens in the beef industry and centralized control is happening to every aspect of our food supply. Absolutely. If you go see that, I would love, please send any information, because this is an area I want to do more research in. These guys are building up to using climate change to steal a lot of land. Open on air, New World Order. What is this? Wait a minute. Let me check out this link. Funny video. Yep. Some more links from down under where it's unbelievable what's going on in Australia. You know, I always thought of Australia as the lucky country. That was its nickname. And you just wonder, what in the world are they doing? And some of it may be sort of a trade war with China. I mean, trying to protect themselves from or bring their economy off of a dependency of China, which is their biggest trade partner, is could be quite a fight. Anyway, you sort of wonder what in the world is going on in Australia, including are they planning on moving 50 million people there from the Northern Hemisphere if there's a nuclear war? Hi, Catherine. You have probably seen this, but another amazing article with incredible detail from Whitney Webb. Great article. Whitney is just writing one great piece after another. And I caught up with her last week. We did an interview. We just published it yesterday on the Salaria Report. It's called Big Money, Creepy Technology, and Cash Friday with Whitney. And a great discussion. She was on a roll, so I just shut up and let her roll. And it's really worth listening to. And she's a reporter. Absolutely worth supporting. So if you're watching the propaganda machinery, just turn it off and support people like Corbett and Whitney Webb and Corey Lynn at Corey Diggs. There's so many great young reporters coming up, and they're just rocking and rolling, and she's one of them. So then somebody sent out a great article in the Defender, a Children's Health Defense Doctors for COVID Ethics, call for the halt of Pfizer COVID vaccines in adolescents. Great piece by the Defender. And again, on July 20th and July 30th at 5 to 10 p.m. UK time. So that's noon to 5 p.m. Eastern time U.S., the Doctors for COVID Ethics are going to be laying out all the evidence as to why the pandemic and the injections should be stopped immediately. All hard fact, all hard science, great doctors, great scientists. Anyway, highly recommended. Stay tuned. You'll see more on that on the Solari website. Then comment, I kind of like CJ's, now I think they mean CJ Hopkins, new segregationist patches. I haven't seen that. I have to check it out. It's pretty in their face, but since they're acting the part, could be quite potent. I recently chipped in for a year's subscription, $60, encourage others to help us take action. You know, I can't recommend CJ Hopkins highly enough. I just think the world of this guy. I think a one-year subscription to Hopkins at $60 a year is a great, I mean, talk about supporting one of the great commentators. And let me add Hopkins to the list of Webb, Corbett, Corey Lynn at Corey Diggs. There's so many great people. Just turn off the propaganda machinery because the real deal is so much more interesting and exciting. We have a new piece coming out that Corey Lynn wrote. It's going to be part two on the vaccine passports, and it's a doozy. I hope to get it up today, if not today, by Friday. Anyway, so that's it for this week. Lots of good things happening. Pushback everywhere, and we send prayers to everybody in New South Wales and Australia and down under. If you're in an area where the pushback is tough, just you're in our prayers and turtle forth, never quit. Have a great day.